mind by nature is radiant and pure, the Buddha said. It is shining. It is because of visiting forces known as defilements that we suffer. It is because of visiting forces known as defilements that we suffer. If we could believe that without any doubt, then it would be important for us to ask and answer the questions, what are these defilements? And what is the danger of these defilements? What is the extent of the suffering of these defilements? And thirdly, if this is so, we'd want to know, how can I work with them in practice? And fourthly, what's the benefit of working with them? What is the benefit of understanding the defilements? My teacher in Burma says, Sayadaw Tejaniya says, it is not you who removes the defilements. Wisdom does that job. Nevertheless, it is our responsibility to cultivate the practice, or to develop the practice that yields that wisdom. Now, because the defilements appear in our speech and in our behavior, when we speak and act in ways that transgresses our relationship with others, the Buddha offered in the Noble Eightfold Path the practice of sila, which is the right speech, right action, right livelihood, in order to guide our speaking and acting so that we do not transgress against others when under the influence of the defilements. Nevertheless, even though we may be speaking and acting with care, consideration, our mind can still be obsessing and nearly overwhelmed or overwhelmed with the defilements. And for that, we need a stronger, a more powerful practice, which the Buddha offered in the instruction in developing concentration or samadhi, which when developed temporarily suppresses or manages, we should say, the defilements. Nevertheless, the defilements are still there. They reside as a potential in all experience. Whatever we experience, the potential is there for some defilement to arise in the mind in reaction to or in relationship to that experience. And for this, the Buddha taught the third training of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the development of wisdom, punya. So it takes our practices of sila, living in harmony, samadhi, calming the mind, and punya, the development of wisdom, in order to fully understand the defilements. And as Sayadaw Tejaniya says, it is this understanding, this wisdom, that removes the defilements from our life. So, what are the defilements? Well, Gil opened the topic last night speaking about desire. And of course, desire is one of the biggies of the defilement clan. But really, we could say that the defilements are any form of greed, aversion, or delusion. Those are the roots of the defilements. And they appear in our speech and behavior. They appear in our thoughts. They appear in our beliefs. They appear in our assumptions. They are everywhere, potentially. And even though I mentioned greed, hatred, and delusion, in the sutras and other commentaries, I've heard, I have not yet verified, but I've heard that there are more than 1,000 defilements. But they're all some manifestation of greed, hatred, and delusion. So delusion, as we can well imagine, is deluded. You don't know. You're ignorant. You're confused. Not aware of what is going on. And this appears in our practice as, you know, doubt, restlessness, confusion. Attachment or desire appears as clinging, greed, wanting, being identified with something. Greed is always accompanied. All forms of greed are accompanied by delusion, not seeing things correctly. Aversion, or all forms of aversion, appear as anger, impatience, hatred, frustration. Aversion too, all forms of aversion, are also accompanied by delusion, not seeing things clearly. Now, in general, the defilements are so familiar to us. They arise in the mind so often, so frequently, that we take them for granted. We see them in everyone. We see them in ourselves a lot. And because they're so frequent as visitors to the mind, we have taken them to be who we really are. You know, my default setting when I was born, I believe, was impatience. That's been my practice my whole life, impatience, dealing with impatience. It arises so often that it's easy for me to slide from a momentary experience of impatience into the assumption, the belief that I'm always impatient, which then slides into this reified sense of self, I'm an impatient person. Well, it's difficult enough dealing with a moment of impatience, but when you are an impatient person forever, it's overwhelming, it's impossible. This gives us a clue as to how to work with the defilements, is when we see that we're identified with them as who I am. Wrong understanding. In a moment of experiencing a defilement, we can work with it. In an identification with them as who I am, we're overwhelmed. So, the defilements, all forms in speech, behavior, thought, and belief, all forms of greed, or aversion, and delusion. So, just so we're clear, what is the danger of these defilements? The Buddha said it is because of these visitors to the mind, known as defilements, that we suffer. Well, you know, I don't know about you, but when I first started Dharma practice, I was young and energetic and, you know, pretty full of myself and pretty cocky and arrogant, and I didn't think I was suffering. You know, I just, you know, accidentally went to a retreat. You know, I didn't intend to start on this path. So we need to understand what is the extent of suffering that the Buddha is pointing to, because these unwholesome states of mind, the defilements, give rise to the effect, which is bound to be unpleasant. Unpleasant body experiences, pain, stress, tension, aching in the body, and unpleasant mental experience, which is the disagreeableness and the stress and the frustration and all the forms of unpleasant mental states that we experience. This is the suffering. Unpleasant physical, unpleasant mental experience. If we don't recognize the defilements, if we don't acknowledge them, if we don't accept that this is the way it is for this period of time, it only strengthens them. Living in denial of the defilements that appear in the mind doesn't make them go away. It only feeds them and they become stronger. So, when they're not understood, they're not observed, not understood, not seen, not recognized, not dealt with, they just grow stronger. Now, we should be clear about the nature of defilements, because defilements obscure our understanding of what's arising or what we're experiencing. They don't obscure the experience itself. We still have experience. We still have all the experiences of life, but we don't understand them correctly. So we want to be clear that defilements don't obscure the object. They obscure the right view of the object. What that means is when delusion has arisen in the mind, well, one form of delusion is we don't even know it. You know, things are happening and we don't know it. It's like when the mind wanders and you don't know it. You're lost in thought. You don't know that the mind is wandering. Only after you come out of it can you look back and say, oh, I was lost. That's delusion. For the length of that wandering mind, that's delusion. We don't know. But there's another form of delusion that we need to be attentive to, and that is when we understand what we're experiencing wrongly. If you don't know it, deluded. If you understand it wrongly, also deluded. So you may be in touch with what's going on. You may be aware of the present moment's experience, but misunderstanding it, another form of delusion. When attachment is in the mind, when attachment arises in the mind, the delusion that accompanies it causes the mind to see only the pleasant aspect of what it's looking at, what the mind is seeing. That's what delusion does. It causes the mind to see only the pleasant aspect when attachment has arisen in the mind. When aversion has arisen in the mind, along with delusion, the mind only sees the unpleasant aspect of something. I'll give you an example. Remember when you fell in love last time? You fall in love, and you look at this person, and you feel they're perfect, they're ideal, they're great, the answer to all my loneliness problems, everything, they're just great. Well, that's the influence of attachment. You can only see the goodness and what's pleasant about this person. You know, later, when the other side of the moon arises, you know, the delusion might not be so strong, and then we see, oh, there are some subtle imperfections. There are some things that I could criticize. And, you know, maybe it's only the delusion of aversion, but we see that we weren't seeing things correctly the first time around. We've all had this experience. It happens all the time, that we're influenced by the defilements. So we need to be aware that when under the influence of delusion and any form of attachment or aversion, we are not understanding what we're seeing correctly. Okay. So now there's a spectrum of defilements in the mind that we need to be aware of also. At one end of the spectrum, and this is the grossest form of defiled mind, where there's no knowledge of defilement, of this particular defilement, and there's no awareness of this particular defilement, and we're just acting it out. Something arises in the mind, and we're just acting it out with full intent and vigor, no second thoughts, no doubt, no hesitation, and that defilement is conditioning our thinking. And that thinking is conditioning our intentions, and those intentions are conditioning what we say and what we do, which is unwholesome. The result is sure to be unpleasant. The greatest danger of this degree of defilement is we never give it a second thought. We act it out with full intent, full energy, repetitively, not knowing, no knowledge that this is an unwholesome state of mind, sure to lead to unpleasantness. It'd be good to know what those thousand defilements are. We may be acting some of them out without recognizing, without the knowledge that they are defilement. But let's assume for a moment that we at least know what they are. We've read them in a book. Now, we have some knowledge of them, but we may have no awareness of them. And when there's no awareness of them, and we're acting them out, we're creating lots of, we'd say, unwholesome karma. But when we do know about them, and there's no awareness, we can exercise some restraint. We can begin to understand that, this is not a good thing to be doing. This is not a good thing to be acting out. And we end up getting in a struggle with ourselves. This is a classic, spiritual dilemma. You know, the spirit, the urge to practice the spiritual life, and the realities of our human existence kind of pulling us back. So the tradition, and most spiritual traditions, have antidotes or things to do to suppress the defilements when they're present in the mind. When we have some understanding of the defilements, we have a knowledge of them, we have some understanding of them, we can use our meditative technique to suppress the defilement. Give you an example. Sometimes we choose an object to pay attention to, like the breath. And through force of intent and habit and energy, we can force our mind to stay on that object. And in the process, suppress the defilement from arising in the mind. I was practicing in Burma. I'd done 10 years of retreats in the West. Then I went to Burma and I was practicing. And I remember the day. I remember the place. I remember the time of day. I was walking, I was doing my walking practice. And it appeared in my mind. Self-pity. I had never seen self-pity before in my life. And yet, it was the most predominant state of mind that was conditioning my behavior. I never saw it, never recognized it. But as soon as I recognized it, I realized my effort to stay on the primary object, the breath, kept it out of my mind. So I never saw it. So we can use our meditation techniques in a skillful way and in an unskillful way. So, if we're going to use the meditative techniques in a skillful way to understand the defilements, because it is through understanding them that we remove them from the mind. Not just temporarily suppress them in the mind, but to remove them from the mind, then we need to understand the defilements. So, how do we work with our defilements in order to understand them? The first step is to get some information. What are these defilements? We know there's some form of greed, hatred, and delusion. But doubt, pride, fear, depression, anxiety, stress, disdain, cynicism, criticism, judgment, they're all forms. All forms of those are some form of defilement. So, beginning to understand them or beginning to get the information of what they look like, then we can begin to recognize them in our practice. Now, to recognize them in our experience means to recognize them when they occur. And we know how difficult this is. As I mentioned, we can be lost in a train of thought. And we can be ruminating on some old relationship or some conversation we had or some fear we had or something we've anticipating with anxiety. We can be ruminating on that and not know it at the time. No perception, no recognition. So through the development of awareness, what we're doing now, we open our mind, or we open our attention to see what's going on, to try to recognize what is going on. We're not just in this practice, in insight practice, we're not just trying to stay with a chosen object. That'll bring good samadhi and tranquility, but it doesn't bring the openness and the receptivity and therefore the opportunity for understanding what's going on in the mind. Again, I was doing my first 3-month retreat at Massachusetts in the meditation center there. And there was a period of time after the first couple of weeks where I got into sloth and torpor. Now, this sounds so impossible, but I had 6 weeks of sloth and torpor. Out of a 12-week course, that's 50%. I had 6 weeks of sloth and torpor. Now, every time I would go for an interview and a check-in, I was talking about sloth and torpor. Amazingly, I don't know how this is possible. I really didn't recognize it. I was talking about it. I knew there was some kind of struggling with it, but I wasn't really recognizing it and taking it in and working with it. It was kind of like a concept in my mind rather than experience in my life. That's lack of perception. Just not really not getting it in the moment. Oh, this is what this state of mind is. Once we begin to recognize what is present, the next step is a little bit counterintuitive. It's to relax. Relax about it. Just relax. Our tendency is to get judgmental and critical and try to get rid of it as soon as possible. You know, we don't want to experience this. Once we recognize, oh, the mind is full of anger, full of hatred, full of judgment, full of pride, full of cynicism, whatever. But we need to relax. And when I say to relax, I mean to accept or to acknowledge that, oh, this is the way it is right now. This is the way it is. You know, anger's in the mind. Relax about it. I don't mean accept it as, oh, this is okay. I mean acknowledge it as the way things are. That will help to avoid the intention or a struggle in trying to get rid of it. It's really important not to struggle with the defilements, not to wrestle with them, because there's a certain, you know, lingering denial of this is the way it is when we're in struggling with them. So we want to see, relax, and understand that this state of mind has arisen due to causes and conditions. It's not you, it's not yours, it's not who you are. It is because of causes and conditions often outside of your control, your immediate control, that has given rise to this state of mind. If you understand the causes and conditions, the defilement disappears. Oh, relax. Try to understand the causes and conditions. When we recognize and accept or acknowledge by relaxing around these defilements, we may have to exercise some restraint because the defilements are strong. They're deeply habituated. They're deeply conditioned. We act them out willy-nilly, at least through thinking, if not through speaking and acting. So we might want to exercise some restraint. And the exercising the restraint, it's not a suppression, it's just a holding back from getting rid of the defilement. And we can do that by replacement. Sometimes, you know, when the defilements are just overwhelming, you know, they're rising in the mind, they're just, you're going under. You're not being mindful of them. You're just getting entangled in them. If you turn your attention to present moment sensory experience, what you see, what you hear, what you feel in the body, you can sustain the continuity of awareness but not be overwhelmed by the defilement. But it takes clearly recognize seeing's happening, hearing's happening, feeling's happening. Or we can do some reflection. You know, if you're overcome by a lot of aversion, anger, irritation, you can practice loving kindness to yourself, to another, as a way of temporarily overcoming that aversion. Or you can generate some faith to overcome temporary doubt. You can generate forgiveness to overcome some form of blaming, criticism. Another way to exercise restraint is just to avoid the situation that provokes that particular defilement. You know the poet, I don't know who the poet is, but I was listening to a poem on NPR one day, and one line of the poem jumped out at me. It says, "Your mind is a dangerous neighborhood. Don't go there alone." Well, that means there's places in your mind you don't want to go rummaging around without your awareness, because you'll get overwhelmed. It's scary in there. There's fears, there's desires, there's aversions, there's all kinds of things in there that if you're not careful, you'll get entangled. So avoid those places of the mind as a temporary way of exercising some restraint. But ultimately, in working with the defilements, we need to begin to understand them. And the first way of working with them is to reframe our misunderstanding about the defilements. And the way to reframe our misunderstanding is that the defilements are a natural result of causes and conditions. Therefore, they're part of the Dharma. Defilements are part of the Dharma. What we're doing here is discovering the Dharma, the way things are. This is the way things are. So, let us discover the Dharma, and in that, we'll have to discover the defilements. Because they are deeply conditioned, habitual, we need to be very patient. We need to be patient with ourselves, with the mind that just gets caught over and over and over again in our deeply conditioned habits of mind. On the other hand, to understand that they are just visitors to the mind encourages us to be persistent. They're just visitors. They're not inherent in the mind. And because they're just visitors, and we have the tools, the understanding, and the tools for working with them, if we are persistent in our application of mindfulness, we can temporarily suppress and eventually uproot them from the mind. Sayadaw Tejaniya says, "Yogis make the mistake of expecting good experience rather than trying to work with the defilements." Really, we should come to a retreat knowing this is the task. We're going to be working with the defilements. They're everywhere. I mean, they are just so present. And the more powerful our awareness becomes, the more subtle the defilements become. So we've got something to look forward to. The second, or a further understanding to help reframe your mind so that you can work with the defilements skillfully, is what Gil was talking about last night. The difference between, we could say, wholesome desire and unwholesome desire. The unwholesome desire in working with the defilements is, I want to get rid of it. Unwholesome. That's aversion. The wholesome desire in working with the defilements is an aspiration to understand them. When we aspire to understand them, we're not just trying to get rid of them, aversion. We're not trying to get something. We're trying to understand. And in that understanding, there's the implicit promise of the Buddha that if we understand it, it will remove that defilement from the mind. Okay. So now we know how to work with the defilements by hearing about them, understanding the danger of them, recognizing them, exercising some restraint after we've relaxed and accepted them, and then beginning to reframe our understanding of them. Now, that's all groundwork for what we're doing here. Because here, the practice is to recognize each moment's experience so that when a defilement arises in the mind, we recognize it. And what that means is, once you recognize it, we need to receive it. Our mindfulness, mindfulness has the ability to touch the moment's experience, just as one hand can touch another. It's the mind touching this defilement, or receiving it, letting this defilement touch the mind in a way that you can become aware of it. And every defilement has its unique flavor. You know, cynicism feels different than desire. Desire feels different than fear. Fear feels different than pride. Pride is different than... Each one has its own unique mental flavor. And that mental flavor conditions a unique physical experience. The challenge for each one of us is to feel the defilement knowingly. Feel it. It has arisen in the mind. What does it feel like? What does the mind feel like? If it's too hard to feel the mind and the flavor of the mind, what does it feel like in the body? What is the conditioned experience in the body that this defilement has? You know, when you feel, to take polar extremes or polar opposites, when you're in love and you're feeling love, oh, the body's light and open and porous and pleasant, and that's what that feels like. And the mind is very confident and allowing and open and spacious. And on the other end of the spectrum is non-love, let's say hate. When you feel hatred, the mind is contracted and critical, and the body's tight and hot and closed. Two very different experiences. We can feel the body, and we can recognize what's going on in the mind. We should not mistake physical sensations for the defilement. Physical sensations are physical. Defilements are always mental. But the mind and the body are talking to each other all the time. So when the mind is invaded or visited by a defilement, there will be a reflection in the body of that defilement. Sometimes we contact the body first and recognize the defilement. Sometimes we contact the defilement and then recognize the conditioned feelings or sensations in the body. Either way gives us a doorway into beginning to understand the unique nature of this defilement. One helpful reminder. Defilements always feel unpleasant. They always feel unpleasant. Physically and mentally. What that means is, if we're really interested in understanding the defilements, in feeling them knowingly, to understand them, we will have to willingly accept discomfort. That means comfort as a goal in practice. It's not possible. To be polite, wrong goal. If you're looking for comfort, you're not going to want to deal with the defilements. So in some ways, you know, we have to be mature enough to recognize that, okay, I'm developing the strength of mind in order to discover the defilements, to know them. And in that, there's an acceptance that it could be more or less physically and mentally unpleasant. Amazingly, we can stay present. Mindfulness doesn't disappear just because something is unpleasant. But we have to distinguish between unpleasantness and aversion. Something can be unpleasant, we don't have to hate it. We don't have to want to get rid of it. We don't have to criticize it. We don't have to judge it. It's when we confuse the two and we say every unpleasantness is to be something to be averse to, we're going to have a hard time really coming to understand the defilements. Because we need to tease those apart and understand that, oh, this is unpleasant. Let me suspend my aversion to it and explore it, feel it, knowingly, recognize it. When we can do that, when we can hold our aversion in check, openly feel the defilement in the mind and in the body, an amazing thing happens. We have this realization, first of all, that it is really unpleasant. Now, think about it. When we're proud, we think, oh, that's a good feeling. Yeah, feeling, you know, confident and proud. But when you really feel proud, it's not just confidence. There's something else in there. Or when we feel self-righteously angry. You know, I'm angry. I should be angry. They were a jerk, and I'm going to let them know. There. That feels good sometimes. It feels good to be really. Not if you really feel it. If you really get in touch with what that feels like, it's not pleasant. Or desire. You know, we often mistake the object of our desire for desire. You know, you're looking at this person, this car, or whatever, this job or something. We say, yeah, well, that'd be great. You know, and you know, when you're merged with it, the feeling in the body is, wow, pleasant. You've achieved, you've gotten, you have what you want. There, pleasant. But the desire itself, before the getting of it, the desire itself, really unpleasant. So we have to be pretty careful in teasing apart, you know, the object, the pleasure of the object from the feeling of desire itself. So we're talking about a very refined continuity of looking at the mind in our moment-to-moment experience. So we understand, we come to understand, we come to realize deeply that this state of mind is unpleasant. The second thing we understand is that it doesn't last very long. It really doesn't last very long. When you can actually touch it with the mind, it's just there. And you're with it, and it's gone. It may come back. Maybe I should say, it will come back. You know, and it may come back frequently. But in that moment, it doesn't last long. This is an important understanding. Important piece of wisdom to acquire that can only be acquired through awareness. Through being, through touching, tasting that defilement as it occurs. The third thing that we realize is not only that it's unpleasant, that it doesn't last very long, we recognize that we see that it isn't really inherent in me. It isn't who I am. It is something that comes due to condition, God knows why. Sometimes we can understand why, sometimes not. It comes, and then it goes. Even sometimes we can't get rid of it. Sometimes it just goes by itself. So we're not in control of the defilement. Well, this is really important to understand also. These three understandings, we can't control them. We can't always control them, I should say. They don't last very long and they're unpleasant. These three knowledges, if you will, are insight. This is vipassana. When you acquire this kind of knowledge, you're acquiring liberating wisdom. Because once you see these qualities about all defilements, you begin to kind of structurally rearrange your misunderstanding about experiences in life. Again, Sayadaw Tejani says, use the appearance of the defilements as an opportunity to investigate their nature. It is the nature of pain, or it is the nature of fear to be like this. It's the nature of attachment to be like this. The nature of depression to be like this. They are natural phenomena. They are not your defilement. Everyone experiences them due to causes and conditions. Okay. So with that as an introduction, let's look at these 1,000. I'm just gonna go over the familiar five that we speak about in retreats like this, and they're known as the five hindrances, but they're five classes of defilements. And as many of you have acknowledged and mentioned, sloth and torpor is pretty familiar the first few days of a retreat. It's hard not to struggle with sloth and torpor. So we need to, you know, use what I said. Recognize it as a defilement. Recognize that it rises due to causes and conditions. Recognize that it's really unpleasant. It's not as comfortable as you think or as you feel. It's the nap that's comfortable. It's not the sloth itself. So, but one way to reframe your misunderstanding about sloth and torpor, Sayadaw Tejani again says, it is perfectly natural to become sleepy. It's perfectly natural. If you feel bad about sleepiness, it means that you have aversion towards it. And then you'll try to resist it. This is the wrong attitude. Simply recognize and accept that sleepiness, and simply recognize and accept sleepiness. As long as you observe it with this right attitude, then you're meditating. Now, he didn't say how long you have to do it or how good you have to be at it. You just have to observe sleepiness with the understanding that you're not trying to just get rid of it. You're trying to understand it. I've heard it said, and maybe Gil and I will talk about this later to find out where it came from, that in the Buddhist pantheon of defilements, that boredom is considered the most dangerous. Boredom. Why boredom? Because it's out of boredom that we stop paying careful attention. And that gives the defilements a field day. If you're not paying attention, the defilements have free reign. So we want to be careful about boredom. Boredom is sometimes akin to sloth and torpor or just kind of heaviness of mind or laziness of mind. So we want to be careful about that. Ramana Maharshi, great yogi of the last century, yeah, said, no one succeeds without effort. Mind at peace is not your birthright. Those who succeed owe their liberation to perseverance. It's just perseverance. Perseverance with understanding, I should say. Second common visitor to the mind that we discover in the first few days of practice is doubt. But doubt is tricky because it's often masked by thinking about practice. Now, we in the West are blessed with this, having access to all the spiritual traditions that we know of. And they're all available online. Everything, more than you could ever acquire and sample in your lifetime. And so we often, many of us have read extensively from this tradition and that tradition, this practice and that practice, and we have all the answers in there. We just don't know which one we need right now. And so the mind gets confused. And we often get caught in, well, should I do this now? Should I do that? Should I sit or should I walk? Should I stay with the breath or should I open to more things? What do I do with this aversion now that I'm being overwhelmed by it? Should I, you know, do metta or should I keep paying attention to it? And these are all forms of doubt. We don't know what to do in practice. We don't know how to understand it. We don't know what to do. We don't know if we're confident enough to do it. We're doubt. And so we try to think, now what did Jack Kornfield say in that book? Yeah, but then, you know, Ajahn Chah, he said that, and already we're confused. When we try to think it through, it's not possible. But yet, in our conditioning to value logic and rational thinking and problem solving, we have this capacity deeply conditioned in our educational training. And so we do it. But it can't overcome doubt. Doubt can only be overcome by practicing. So we have sloth and torpor. We have doubt. Again, aversion. All forms of aversion. I'm sure you've seen some today, but let me just point to some of the manifestations of aversion. Generally, there are three kinds. There's the striking out kind of aversion. You know, something's unpleasant, and we go hit it. We hit it with our mind. Hatred, anger, rage, these are all striking out at the object that we hate, that we have rage towards. And it's a form of, you know, when aversion arises, it's often conditioned by an unpleasant feeling. We haven't yet recognized the unpleasant feeling. We think it's that person, you know, that is causing us to feel this way. And so we attack the person with rage, anger, hatred. There's an internalizing kind of aversion, which instead of attacking and hitting something with the mind, hitting something outside, we hit ourselves. We turn inward and we beat up ourselves. This is depression, frustration, disappointment, despair, sometimes impatience, where the unpleasant feeling that we feel, we beat up ourselves for it. There's a third kind of aversion, and it's a pushing away. It's not a striking out, and it's not an internalizing. It's a pushing away, and this is appears in the form of fear, backing away from that experience, or irritation with someone or something, or judgment of something, and cynicism. Did you ever think of cynicism as a defilement, as a form of suffering? Well, think about it. What's going on when cynicism arises in the mind? Something, you know, you're reading the political blog, and this, oh yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And the mind doesn't fully take it in, it just kind of pushes it away out of an unpleasant feeling in the mind. So we want to, you know, expand our field and ability to recognize the different kinds of aversion, because they require different tools for working with them. Another really common manifestation of defilement in practice is restlessness. Restlessness is most often seen as the wandering mind. Okay? Now the Buddha said of the mind, he says, the mind is difficult to control. We can verify that. Swiftly and lightly, it moves and lands wherever it pleases. It is good to tame the mind, for a well-tamed mind brings happiness. So the Buddha said, the mind is difficult to control. Swiftly and lightly it moves and lands wherever it pleases. When I first read this, with some appreciation for what was being said, I went to my teacher, Upandita in Burma, and I said, the Buddha said, does that mean anybody's mind can go anywhere at any time? And Upandita said, what's your experience? You know, if you look at it, your mind can go anywhere at any time. You can't stop it. I mean, you can develop the mind, a samadhi practice to suppress it, but who can stop the mind from going places that we would prefer it not go? It goes. This is restlessness. Restlessness also is, as I say, the wandering mind, not knowing that the mind is just wandering around until it finds something that it really likes or dislikes. And then it really just latches on. They say that the longer the wander, the greater the restlessness. You know, in the beginning of practice, you know, the first retreat you ever do, some of you may be here on your first retreat, you know, you come in, you sit down, and, you know, 45 minutes goes by, and you say, God, that was a good sitting. My mind only wandered 3 times. Of course, it wandered for, you know, 15 minutes each time, but it was good, only 3 times. And then after you've been here a week or a year or 10 years, and you sit down for 45 minutes, you notice your mind wandering 45 times. It's like, oh my God, 45 times. And you think, my practice is getting worse. My mind wandered 45 times. Before, it only wandered 3. Actually, it would be better to notice the mind wandering 45 times. Because you're breaking up the momentum of the restlessness 45 times instead of just 3. So don't mistake increasing recognition of defilements as worsening practice. The more defilements you recognize, the better your practice is getting. Kind of counterintuitive, but it's true. So the wandering mind is not the problem, Saito Vatejaniya says. The attitude that it should not be wandering, that's the problem. Mind wanders. Don't make that the problem. Adjust your attitude to recognize, oh, this is a natural occurrence. Don't struggle with it. Just be quick to recognize, oh, this is the wandering mind. And then again, attachment or desire, as Gil was mentioning last night. Great talk on desire, good desire, bad desires. It's good to remember that desire only sees the pleasant aspect of what we're looking at. It doesn't see the full picture. And so it can help caution us from rushing in to fulfill that desire. So these are some of the defilements and the understanding that can help us be willing to recognize them and to exercise some restraint and to work with them in our practice, knowing that they are an inevitable discovery to make in this journey of awakening. So let's sit for a moment and let the words quiet down. Only when we're able to recognize, understand, and disidentify from the defilements will wisdom grow. And it's not you who removes the defilements. Wisdom does that job. Thank you for listening to the Dhamma.
So Thank you.